Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Susan Franson, Gina McAndrews, and Paul Wearson. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks, Mike. I'd like to give a special introduction to both my co-hosts. We're continuing our road trips to places we've enjoyed in the past. And both Paul and Gina have shared road trips with me, especially to Jefferson. And I know they will have some great memories to add as we visit places small and nearby, Jewel and Little Ball Lake,
large and at the western edge of our listening area,
Jefferson. We think you'll enjoy knowing about these places as you venture out from your various pandemic shelters.
Thank you. Yes, I certainly remember a lot of fun times we had on our trips to Jefferson and Jewel.
Oh, yes, wow. And I. Robbie's old theater and all of his furniture shops over in Jefferson. That was a great educational experience, too. And Robbie's quite an entrepreneur.
Yeah, we'll probably be talking about him later. He went quiet during the pandemic, but he's got plans for the summer. And there are plenty of good things nearby. Our first guest will be exploring Jewel. Well, I think we should thank Jewel for raising $15,000 to buy rescue craft for use at Little Wall Lake. But the people from Jewel took right in and said, if we just had a couple rescue boats, well, there are they here now?
Yeah, Dwayne Hendrickson from the Jewel Fire Department.
Okay, well, the fire department is responsible for collecting the money and buying those rescue craft, aren't they?
Yes, we have gone into a fundraiser. It's under the Jewel Fire Department name because we can accept charitable contributions, but we're doing it in partnership with Hamilton County Conservation. That's another authority at Little Wall Lake on the park because it's a county entity, but it's a good resource for the area, and we like to work with them to make sure that we have all the resources needed.
Well, Little Wall Lake is
very different than the Little Ball Lake that I knew when I came here in the 60s.
That was the first important lake for us. We had just gotten a sailboat, and we wanted to learn how to sail. And to go out after work, we could go out to Little Wall Lake, and it was pretty amazing.
We have the ideal people here now to tell us how it has changed and what's going on there. We have Brian Lammers, the Executive Director of Hamilton County Conservation, and you've already heard from Dwayne Hendrickson, Fire Chief of Jewel.
Well, I just wondered when things happened out there, because my first memory of Little Wall Lake was we used to go out and sail after work. As I said, we'd go picnic, and sometimes we didn't even picnic. We'd just go out, and my husband would put up a boat, and there was a boat ramp, but other than that, I don't think there was anything. There certainly weren't docks. What was it like when you arrived, and when was that?
I started in Hamilton County in the year 2000. So when I got here, the lake was, for North Central Iowa, kind of one of the meeting places for folks to do. But the Iowa DNR actually owns and manages that lake. The Hamilton County Conservation Board just manages and owns the park around the lake. So it's kind of a joint effort on doing a couple things together. But they already had in place a plan to dredge that lake, which completed in 2002. So the lake was a very shallow lake. It's a natural glacial lake, which is not uncommon for those types of lakes in Iowa. They're not designed to be very deep. The lake actually just wants to be a marsh really bad, but we just don't let it. We want it to be a recreational destination, and that's what it's used for as today as well. So the lake today is used mostly as recreational opportunities, and, it's a very busy lake. Like I said, if you think about the lakes in Iowa for people to come to, Sailorville Lake, down in Des Moines, Clear Lake, and then Twin Lake. So there's really no other recreational opportunity for for lakes to for people to come to. So when they did the dredging, we saw quite an increase of users at that park.
Paul here. I'm just jumping into the conversation. How many camping slots do you have? That's quite a large area for campers and RVs that you got.
Yeah, we basically did a complete renovation for the park. The original campground, you know, was started in the early 70s. Nothing got changed until about 2009. We started doing a major renovation in phases. So we did it in four different phases. We started in 2009 and finished in 2014. We are now at 106 campsites. 55 of those are full hookups and the rest are all electric and water. Once we made those renovations, our numbers even went higher. At one point, we saw a 300% increase in camping and over those years. And then, of course, the lake being done, that helped out quite a bit as well. So we are extremely busy down there. And if you've ever been on that lake on a Sunday afternoon in July, it's pretty impressive for the amount of watercraft and usage for such a small lake.
Do they allow power boats, you know, water skiing and all that sort of thing as well?
Yeah, that lake has no limit on size or motor for that lake, so it's basically wide open.
Well, I just wanted to reiterate that, of course, Little Vaw Lake has been in the news recently. Back in March, there was the tragedy of the rowing crew from Iowa State that had a couple of fatalities up there. And I know that probably you folks at the Jewell Fire Department were responding to that tragedy when you started the fund drive.
Yes, the fund drive came out of that tragedy. As we look at the process after the fact, we always assess what went well and what could we do better. We tended to arrive at the fact that maybe we could have shaved just a couple of minutes off if we had resources a little closer, because the people that did respond did it very fast, and the people that worked on there did it an excellent job, but we think maybe we could do a little better if we had closer resources. So that initiated the fund drive to kind of get our own watercraft at the lake and at the city, which is only about a mile away.
So how far are you? Have you actually purchased the watercraft now?
We've raised enough money to at least put a down payment on a watercraft that will be stationed at the lake. So we were able to guarantee that craft will be there. And they're basically, it's in a showroom, so we don't have to wait for it. So it's just kind of waiting for us to finish making a payment on it to be able to get it to the lake.
Well, that'll give you a margin of safety that wasn't existing before. And, you know, I think that Jewell needs a pat on the back, because you're talking about a fundraiser that's been done locally there. But it also, I know that they've raised enough money to reopen the grocery store up there, too, because Craig, who ran that, has retired. And tell us a little bit about that, too. That was quite a fundraiser.
Well, that fundraiser, once the store retired, it got sold out to another operator that wasn't able to keep it going. And the community decided that was just too much of a service in the community to let it go. So they had good luck doing a cooperative effort at the local hardware store. And that was successful, so then they tried that at the grocery store and did fundraisers, and they did drive-through meals. And the local people and the area people from counties around came by and supported that. And today, that's a going concern. The grocery store is a valuable part of the community.
Well, I think small-town Iowa depends on everybody pitching in and working together, and probably the ultimate a continually functioning entity in a small town that really has to exist is the fire department. How many folks do you have on board there at Jewell Fire Department?
At the fire department right now, we have 23 volunteers. We do fire and rescue. We have an ambulance service where we have two ambulances. A favorite saying I've picked up over time at different conferences is a fire department is a reflection of what the community will support. And if you were to come in our door today at the Jubal Fire and Rescue, you'd see the variety of equipment we have and the facility we have. The community supports us well, and we thank every day the community for their support and participation in our activities.
And you don't have any trouble raising volunteers, right?
It's so far not been a problem. By our bylaws, we can have as many as 35. We don't like to get down into the teens, but it's like anything in small town Iowa. Volunteers are becoming a little hard to come by because the younger folks sometimes don't want to make the commitment it takes for the fire department. Fire department needs a lot of training. All the different things we start getting into need training to be proficient at. So sometimes it's hard to make the time commitment.
Yeah, it really is a volunteer job. It's really, in essence, a professional job. So you have volunteers who are really functioning as professionals, and they have to be motivated highly, and they have to be people willing to not only take specific training and qualify for what fire department people have to do, but also they have to be available and have that commitment. So it's probably time to salute all the people in the small towns who do step forward and become volunteers at the fire department. And I think that, particularly in this case where you've raised money for the rescue effort out there, that's just sort of on top of all the other things you do. And are there fundraisers during the year for the fire department too?
No, normally in the past, the last fundraiser we had was when we bought our first ambulance back in the 1980s. We haven't had to have much for fundraisers because we've had very good support through estate donations and just private donations throughout time. We're able to fill the need that we have. So this is something we thought needed to be done quicker than what our normal budget process was. So it was more important to get it done this season to fill the need, so that's why we're having the fundraiser. So we
do. I already think that that's commendable that you got that done. But with reference to the lake, I was wondering, what are the long-term plans? Are there going to be doing any building up there, or more improvements on the dock, or what's in the plan long-term for Little Wall Lake?
As far as construction goes, you know, the most recent ones were constructing three cabins. We have year-round cabins on that lake as well that are full amenities. The campground, as I mentioned, was completed in 2014. We have two other goals here. One of them is to construct a new shower house, which is overdue. And the other one is to construct a lodge facility that could be rented out year-round that would overlook the lake. But as far as docks, those docks are joint managed and owned by the DNR and County Conservation. We will be working with DNR this fall to try to submit a water recreation access grant to do improvements for the ramps and the docks themselves for those ramps. So we got, otherwise it's day-to-day management and trying to keep it, usable for everyone that comes out. It's a daily task, but like I said, the amount of people that come out, it keeps us very busy.
Well, I grew up at Story City, and when I was in high school, Little Wall Lake was very shallow, almost like a wetland, and I know it was dredged. How often do you have to dredge that to keep it up to date?
The last dredging was done in 2002. You're probably not going to see that done for a while. The last time it was dredged, DNR and the federal government were able to get through the Clean Waters Act a grant. I think that exceeded over $7 million to do that dredging. That's a 250-acre lake. There's about 100 acres that were dredged. So most likely it's going to be quite some time before we see that happening again. There's really no watershed to that lake. It's under 1%. So the sedimentation is very low. But like you mentioned too, it's a shallow glacial lake. They're not designed to be deep. So the sedimentation actually just comes from vegetation over many years dying back.
What is the average depth of Little Wall Lake?
Well, normal pool, since we've been going through a drought, we're probably close to 2 feet below normal pool right now. Average depth in the dredged areas are, you know, going to be that 10 to 12 foot mark. Outside the dredge areas, it's usually 5 to 6. But as I mentioned, the drought last year and going into this spring, we haven't seen a normal pool yet. So we're still a couple feet below that. So, you know, when people do come out, they just have to be cautious of it, what they're operating and where they're operating at.
Well, thank you both so much.
In case you just tuned in, today's local talk began with a celebration of Jewel and Little Wall Lake as hosts Gina McAndrews and Paul Wearson discussed the development of Little Wall Lake with Brian Lammers, the executive director of Hamilton County Conservation, and the safety equipment purchased by the Jewel Fire Department as described by Dwayne Harrison, the fire chief of Jewel.
I think we could go on, but we have a visitor who's here for a very short time with some breaking news from the Ames City Council. So Susan Riaz is here to tell us whether we're going to have a master ordinance going forward or whether it's going to be lifted. Is that right? Is that what your mission is?
Yes, that is correct. Yes, we had a city council meeting last night. It was a special meeting of the Ames City Council, and there were only three items on the agenda. One of them was perfunctory, but the other two were in regards to the pandemic. One of them was, now again, there was never going to be any action last night because there was not action posted on the agenda. So it was simply discussion of the mask mandate. And in the end, the council voted unanimously, and that's kind of important because whenever there's those unanimous votes, you know that that's kind of a signal. The council voted unanimously to place on the next regular meeting a motion to repeal the mask mandate. They also asked that the rules be suspended. You typically have, you suspend the rules when you don't want to do all the readings. When you're dealing with ordinances, you do three readings, and they tend to be handled on consecutive meetings. But their direction was to suspend the rules in not having the second and third reading, so to pass this in one meeting, and also to direct staff to put on a resolution indicating that the Story County ordinance about masking would have no bearing in Ames. So that was a three-point approach. And those would all be addressed at the May 25th regular city council meeting. The other thing that they did relating to the pandemic was that they agreed to resume in-person city council meetings, commission meetings, board meetings that the council has control over. Those would become effective June 1st. They would resume those in public. So that was an interesting development as well. That passed 6-0, and that for those meetings where we have partner organizations involved, such as Iowa State University or healthcare agencies, they'll reach out to those groups to find out where their comfort level is. Otherwise, we'll start seeing in-person meetings return to City Hall effective June 1st. Wow. And that really was the extent of last night's meeting. It was relatively short. It ended in about 40 minutes, and it is true that next meeting on May 25th, they will take public comment. So if people are interested in sharing their thoughts about the mask mandate, they can do that on the May 25th meeting. That is the next regularly scheduled meeting. That was really it.
Oh, thank you. And I guess by the time it's all passed, we won't need breaking news.
Yeah. Now, so that means that the mask mandate still stands until our next meeting, where they had given pretty clear indication that it will be repealed. But until that May 25th meeting, the mask mandate is in place with a plan to certainly fast track it for repeal on the 25th. It has to be published in the newspaper of record. And the quickest it could be published would be May 28th, and then it becomes effective.
Well, it was very hard to get it passed in the first place, as I recall.
Yeah, it's been a very controversial topic since it was first enacted. There are various thoughts on what it should contain and if there should be penalties. But as you know, there is no penalty for not obeying the mask mandate. And I don't think that's been a secret. There has been no fine, no citation issued for those who don't currently decide to wear masks. Again, private businesses can have their own policy. If the city policy was repealed, a private business could go ahead and continue to have their mask mandate in place. So they cannot be less restrictive than the city, but they certainly could be more restrictive. So if this does go forward on May 25th, if it is published in the paper on May 28th and becomes effective, and the mask mandate is repealed on May 28th, it is possible that you will go into a private business and they can still have a mask policy. That is, they can do that. That's their right. It's, like you said, it's been very divisive, and a lot of people are interested in it. So I'm glad to have the opportunity to share that. May 25th is the day to circle on your calendar if you're interested in speaking to the council. I think their direction on their vote being 6-0 and the way that they're fast-tracking this should give you a good indication on the way that they're heading, and it looks very likely that this will be completely repealed on May 25th.
This is a morning where we've hardly had a chance to introduce our first guest or properly thank them, but I would like to for those who might not have caught them, we had Brian Lammers, the executive director of Hamilton County Conservation, and Dwayne Hendrickson, the fire chief in Jewell. So thank you so much for being with us today and for updating us also on the other things that the fire department does. Incidentally, one of the things that you didn't stress that I know is very, very important. It's probably why you get the donations from bequests, because it's very, very important for emergency medical care. You said that one of the last purchases you had was an ambulance?
Yes, that was a while ago, but the ambulance is a division of the department that actually can sustain itself. Because, of course, with transport, we have an income stream, whereas the fire is dependent on property tax levies. So we're able to, once we have an ambulance in place with a fundraiser, then we're able to replace it regularly with the income stream that we have. So it's a little better. So the rescue department does have a little different funding stream.
Well, that means that your firemen or fire personnel have to also be trained as medics. Is that right?
Yes, we have a basic transport service, so we are EMT, which is emergency medical technician. So we have that with the rescue. We also have grain bin rescue, ice rescue, extrication from entrapment. And now we'll have water rescue technicians coming up. Anything that we see as a service needs to be done in the community, we try to address it. So we don't do trench rescue or confined space or high angle. We're not going to be dangling off of a windmill very soon, but we don't have that resource in our area. So,
well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for the time you gave me.
It was wonderful to have you here.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and Gina McAndrews, Paul Wearson, and I have been your hosts for today.
Leaving Story County, we traveled west across Boone to the far edge of our listening area in Jefferson in Greene County.
There, I went to the Jefferson Matters office and found Reagan Hannigan. the director of Jefferson Matters, who gave me an update about how Jefferson is coming out of the depressing days of the pandemic. Here's what she has to say.
Yeah, we've got a lot of things going on in Jefferson. We were busy during the pandemic, despite all the restrictions that we had, but are also very busy coming out of it. So our organization's purpose is to support, promote, and preserve the historic downtown of Jefferson, Iowa, while contributing to the greater community's continued vitality. So some of the things that have been happening are just improvements done to the buildings in Jefferson. And one way our organization has helped with that is by providing building facade mini grants, storefront signage mini grants. We promote Main Street Iowa design assistance for facade improvements. And then many of our buildings in town have been renovated or have had some sort of facade improvement. The city of Jefferson has been a key partner. They've acquired some buildings and renovated those, and now they're being sold to new or expanded businesses. So it's very exciting in town right now.
But one of the things that caught my eye were some sculptures or piers of some kind. What are those and where are they?
Yeah, we have our Ring Out for Art sculpture. We just had sculptures arrive to Jefferson as of last week. We have four different sculptures done by four different artists on the square of Jefferson right by the courthouse. So if you want to come and check those out, they are very, very interesting and very neat to see and a unique perspective that we can add to Jefferson. So we're excited to have those in the community as well.
I don't suppose there have been any changes to the bell tower.
The bell tower just opened for the season starting in May. They're open every weekend. After Memorial Day weekend, or after Memorial Day, I should say, they're open every day. So it's good to see people getting back out into the community and visiting the bell tower. And a lot of people who visit the bell tower also visit our office, which is located at Thomas Jefferson Gardens, which is also known as a welcome center. You know, if you ever get a free day to come to Jefferson, be sure and stop at the bell tower and come to the gardens as well.
You told me you had some new roof art.
Yeah, we just had another rooftop art added onto our rooftop art gallery, we can say. Artist Ryan Christensen, known as RC, was here and painted a portrait with all spray paint of a rural Iowa farmer. So to check that out, you can go up on the bell tower. It's best to see it on kind of a not super sunny, but a day like today, kind of cloudy, and it's really amazing work that he's done. There's also a hidden Mickey Mouse in the portrait too. So if you can find that, it just makes it even more fun.
Well, as I recall, you have several roofs that have paintings on them.
Yeah, this is just adding on to the gallery, and we want to hope to contribute more. And I know this was just on TV not too long ago. We had KCCI come out and check out the rooftop art that RC was doing, and it's gotten a lot of exposure, and we've gotten a lot of interest from a few other artists who are interested in coming and doing some rooftop art. So we're happy to keep expanding that project. I think it's a really unique perspective that Jefferson has on art.
Yes, it really is. And, of course, it's best from the top of the bell tower, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. We've also got, speaking of art and unique places and unique things in Jefferson, we've got some alleys that are very interesting spots. We've got Sally's Alley, and then we've got another alley finishing up called Arch Alley. And there will be a ribbon cutting and a ceremony for that on June 4th at 5:30. In the alley, so they're kind of a neat space to come out and have a cup of coffee and just enjoy the artwork.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I think with our little supplements, Gina and I went to the top of the bell tower. It's pretty amazing. Fortunately, it has a good elevator because it would be quite a climb otherwise. Right, Gina?
Yes, it was a great opportunity to really see quite a view from the tower all across Jefferson, and they have a lot of events there. And it was really nice to see all the rooftops and how all the different paintings that they've done, and just really creative the ways that they've have really used that tower for different events and fundraisers. They've even had some weddings there. And it's really fun just to see all the different paintings on the rooftops and that they're really expanding them. They're really fixing up a lot of the center of town in Jefferson, and a lot of the buildings are getting some updates and, you know, TLC that they've needed over the years. And Jefferson is really a fun place to go.
Paul, you saw the video. What did you see in the video?
Oh, at Jefferson, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I think that when I think of Jefferson, of course, I think of Robbie Peters, because he is such an entrepreneur. He has that furniture store that he builds all that furniture from the 1870s, and it's all, of course, you know, he was originally an artisan down at the Living History Farm, so he's been at that for a long time, and all the furniture that he manufactures there, it's all dated from the 1870s, and when he prices that, he's doing it based on the inflation from that date. So he's done a lot of book work and research. But what I really like about this situation is the old lumber yard is where he's got his store. And, of course, that had a lot of storage space and a very high ceiling. So Robbie made that into a theater with seating and a balcony and everything. And he has a troop of people who do shows. It's like community theater, but they do a lot of avant-garde plays that are off the beaten path. Robbie's very creative, and along with things that everyone recognizes, he does a lot of avant-garde off-Broadway type theater. So he's a very creative person, and he's a native to Jefferson. He had a store in Story City for a while, but moved to Jefferson when the opportunity came up to take the lumber yard. So it's a very happy marriage of Robbie's enterprise and the available building there. Another thing about Jefferson, there's a, I can't think of the name of it right now, but there's a nice, cute little restaurant on this town square, and that's a old home, stick-to-your-ribs type diner food and great lunch. And that sticks out in my mind because I always like these small-town restaurants, and I always order a hot beef because I'm sort of a connoisseur of hot beef sandwiches. So if I go to a small-town restaurant, I see what their hot beef's like. The answer is a time-honored question. Can they do gravy decently? And so they scored on that. I remember they scored well on my card down there at that restaurant. And it's a very lively downtown. It's a really thriving place, and I think that Jefferson has a great future, and they're doing a lot of great things. And when you and I were there, Susan, I was very impressed, and that actually was a while ago, so I probably have missed some of the more local things and lately things, like that marvelous painting on the rooftop. That was a feature on the television news, that you can only see from above. So that's why it was so unique. So there's a lot of creative people in Jefferson, and a lot of people who are doing things that are, I think, innovative. And that's great, because a community survives and grows based on the kind of personalities who step forward and make things happen. And I think that's happening in Jefferson. And our road trips we've taken, we've encountered a lot of people like that, haven't we, Susan? The spark plugs who make these small towns progressive and innovative. We've had fun, haven't we?
Oh, yes, we have. And that's, of course, how I got really started on KHOI, because I didn't think I could do interviewing. I didn't think I could be live in the air. And then I got hooked up with you because you had a wonderful voice, and you could just naturally, you know, get on the air and talk as long as necessary. You say, we need you for 5 minutes. You could talk for 5 minutes, and you were ended at the end of the 5 minutes. But we went out to small towns, and every small town we went to, you knew something special. And by the end of the interview, I knew something special, and I was so impressed. Every town had something that they loved and that they shared. They had personalities. I mean, the town had a personality. And it was amazing. Like, all these people who lived around me and I had never known them. So I'm always happy to get reacquainted.
Well, you know, every town has its festival, and you and I and KHOI on this Wednesday segment has often helped them promote their festivals. Every town has something that uniquely identifies them. The Swinging Bridge in Story City, the Tower in Jefferson. And I remember being in the phone booth in Kelly. It's a working phone booth where you can actually talk on the phone. One of the few left. And I think maybe we have to take grade school kids on road trips to look at that so they know that there was a life before phones in your hand, you know, that there actually were phone booths, and there's still one working phone booth in Kelly, Iowa.
Yeah, and the local provider, I think they are also an internet provider, but they make sure that that phone booth is maintained. And that's one of the prides of the area. Well, thank you so much for being with us with your insights.
For our music break, let's play something from 1875 in honor of Robbie Peterson's furniture workshop and store, RVP, 1875 in Jefferson. The song, in case anyone is curious, is Gentle Annie by Stephen Foster.
We have now a very exciting final segment to this. This is Local Talk on KHRI Community Radio, and we're concluding our show today by celebrating the Iowa Library for the Blind. which just won a very impressive national award. According to Shelby Flagg in Des Moines Register, even during the pandemic, the library has created new programming for all ages while maintaining its pre-pandemic service levels. Its staff of 14 and a network of about a dozen volunteers shifted online in the early days of the pandemic, so the library never missed a day of mail shipments, which is the main way it gets its material to patrons. And we have with us Sarah Williford, who is the executive director. And tell us about the award presentation. I guess, have you had a live one yet? Will you?
Good morning. So yes, we were awarded the 2020-2021 Regional Library of the Year under the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. We were very excited. We were given the award sort of live, sort of on Zoom last week during conference for the Libraries for the Blind and Print Disabled in the Midwest and Western regions of the United States. So Karen Kenninger, who is the current director of the National Library Service, actually got to be here in Des Moines with us and presented us the award while the other libraries were on Zoom. So we have received the award last week.
This award came from the Library of Congress.
Yes, it's a lot of words and sometimes a lot of acronyms, but the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled is at the Library of Congress, and we are a regional library of that National Library Service. Each state has a library similar to ours within them that provides services.
You also have Braille. Is that right?
Correct, we do. So for eligibility for our library services, it's for anyone who cannot read standard print due to blindness, low vision, physical disability, or reading disability. So our collection at our library consists of audiobooks, Braille books, large print, and then we have print Braille, which has both print and Braille, and those are kind of your younger kids, the picture book type books. So that is what we have in our collection.
Is there any book in place for that, or does everybody get their materials by mail?
We do have ability to walk in. Our library is located within the Iowa Department for the Blind in Des Moines on downtown Des Moines, 524 4th Street. Right now, our doors are open from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., and we hope to potentially later this summer return to our pre-pandemic hours, which are 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. So you can come to our library during those times. The majority of our patrons do receive their books via mail, which you described earlier. So we will send audiobooks, Braille, large prints, all of that to the mail or through the mail to our patrons, and then they send those back to us in the mail, and we just keep that cycle going so they always have their materials.
One of the things you told me about that I thought was interesting was that audiobooks used to be on records, on the old vinyl records, and then they were on CDs. But you have now, so that people don't have to change them in and out of the machines, which might be kind of difficult sometimes, you have something else you call, I can't remember the name, it's a thumb drive, right?
Correct. So yes, our audiobooks have gone through several different formats. As you say, you know, we started with the records and cassettes, and now what we use is digital audiobooks, and it is what we call a cartridge. It's plastic, but basically with inside that plastic is a thumb drive, and we're able to download 20 titles onto one cartridge at a time to send to our patrons. We also have another way to access those audiobooks as well as Braille books is an app you can get on your computer or your smartphone or your device, and it's called Braille and Reading Braille and Audio Reading Download, or as we lovingly call it, BARD, B-A-R-D. And so you can also have access to our audio and Braille collection through that app on your device.
Thank you for this amazing tour of your library.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we've just been speaking with Sarah Williford, the Executive Director of Iowa Library for the Blind, which just won a national award as being the outstanding Library for the Blind for 2020-2021. In the last few minutes of today's Local Talk, Paul Brisson and I, Susan Franzen, are celebrating with Duane Hendrickson the resilience of small towns.
As I said, Little Ball Lake had no facilities, really, when we first came to Ames in the mid-60s. And it had been dredged already once. And I have a picture of my husband rigging a small sailboat standing in the water with putting the sails on and lifting the sails in the bottom, with his feet on the bottom of Little Ball Lake. So it was pretty shallow. And the other thing that I remember is we had a regatta. We had built a whole fleet, over 20 9-foot sailboats. And we had a regatta in April, I think April 21st. And it was covered by the Ames Tribune. I have the pictures from that regatta with the snow falling on the boats. When I told our first guest about that, when I told Brian Lammers on that, he laughed and said, yeah, that could happen now. We could have snow on the lake.
Well, another thing about Jewell is the golf course up there. Years ago, they created their golf course, and the only building on the course was the original farmhouse on the property. So it was a real basic clubhouse. And it was a Jewell Golf and Country Club, which still exists. And you could play golf all day, unlimited, for $2.16. And so I'd bring people up from Des Moines who couldn't believe that you could play golf all day for $2. And we would just max out and see how many holes we could play before we dropped out, you know. And now that golf course is splendid. It has a big clubhouse. And actually, the clubhouse has expanded large enough to be an event center, too, wedding receptions and things like that. So the golf course is vastly improved in other ways, too. But the clubhouse is really very large for a town that size. And my memory is that the high school construction class did the building on that structure. I'm pretty sure that happened. So at least a lot of the work on the structure, and that's kind of unique too, and that says a lot more about the community spirit at Jewell, because that golf course, you can't play for that amount anymore. But so that was the humble origin of Jewell Golf and Country Club out of a farmhouse. Now it's a full-service bar and restaurant and everything, so the people of Jewell have a lot of options, and they're a very lively, community-spirited place up there, just evidenced by what we heard today. And I think that when we talk about small-town Iowa being challenged, Jewell faces some of those, too. But they're on the Main Street program, and they've really uplifted a lot of their facades and storefronts and done creative things downtown, because in so many small towns now, the biggest symptom you see is shuttered stores. And Jewell is really bouncing back from that and improving the Main Street. And
yeah, they really came together, I think, a year or two ago to get their grocery store going again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a community effort. And they did it themselves. And
somebody's going to retire.
You know, that's one thing we have in this area. If you have a small town that's commutable to a large town, like most people in Story City and in Jewell and places like that work in Des Moines or might even Ames. Well, most of them work in Ames. Well, they're tempted to stop at a large store on their way home from work and not shop at the local grocery store. And so the community has to not only support the idea of keeping their store open, they have to make sure that they make choices to shop locally, because there are so many large grocery stores in Ames with a much bigger variety and cheaper prices because they buy in bulk. And so it's the same thing that you see in vertical integration with everything. Get bigger or die, you know. And people don't realize that if they don't patronize their local grocery store, it dies. And that's not what happened at Jewell. The man that had it retired. But in many cases, that is what happens. The store can't compete with larger, big-time stores. And so they die. And then the people realize, oh, no, we got to have a grocery store. And then there's a community effort. And that has to be largely marshaled by the local people to make the funding happen for the store's reopening. But then comes the small print. You've got to keep the store going over time. And these are some of the challenges that really are present today in rural Iowa. And right here in Ames, in this area, we're on the top of the Golden Circle. But you look at more remote areas in Iowa, and where there's not a large town nearby, those small towns are really having a challenge. And so that's what Iowa is going through now. That's so contrasty with the era when I grew up, when every small town had a high school. You know, it's a different time.
It's a different time, but I have a question about competing interests. When we first came here, there was still hunting on Little Ball Lake. Is that, do you know, Duane, do you still have duck hunting there?
There is a section that's owned by the Iowa DNR where they do some hunting to the east side of the lake.
Well, the reason I asked was because I mentioned our first regatta was in April, and it snowed. Well, we said our second regatta was out much thought to anything, but that we'd like to, you know, be out on the lake for a Saturday morning or Saturday. And when we arrived, I don't think we even noticed that there were these big brush piles around the lake. But we started sailing, people stood up from the brush piles waving their guns and saying, "This is opening day!"
They don't have it so much close to the lake, but there is some hunting off the lake. There used to be a skeet shooting range out there too, but the campground's kind of taken that over, so they don't have that so much anymore.
That would be kind of a competing interest.
Yes, I'd say so.
That's a very, very special history we have up there. And thanks so much for being here and telling us about it and going back and facing whatever comes up, whatever you have to deal with today.
Very good.
Thank you, Duane. You've been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Hosts were Gina McAndrews, Susan Franzen, and Paul Wearson. Guests were Brian Lammers, Duane Hendrickson, Susan Guiazza, Regan Hannigan, and Sarah Williford. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Other music you heard was Gentle Annie from 1875 by Stephen Foster, sung by the Robert Shaw Chorale.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, please contact us at 515 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or you can contact us through our website at khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member. Or you can renew your membership today as well. Just khoifm.org and hit the yellow donate become a member button. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends. Remember, your participation and as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.